The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
This is Mike Consa. Welcome to Author Spotlight. Our guest is Robert Kohlhepp, who joined Cintas Corporation back in July 1967 as controller. Over the span of 50 years with that company, he was promoted to positions of general manager, vice president, and treasurer, executive vice president, president, and CEO. He then served as vice chair of the board, actually vice chair and board chair until retiring in 2016. Additionally, he has served on several association, corporation, nonprofit, and university boards. But we're going to talk to Robert today because he is the author of a new book called Building a Better Organization. With that, Robert Kohlhepp, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike, and thanks for having me.
Now, I am curious about the timing. Two things. Number one, what was the impetus for this book? And I suspect it might have something to do. The timing may go hand in hand with that. I'm not sure. What inspired you to write it?
Well, I've done a lot of teaching both within the company I work for and outside at universities and with other companies as well. And frequently I was asked after I would finish my remarks, you should write a book. And I thought about it and never pulled the trigger. And I received a book from a friend of mine that I really enjoyed about, it was about leadership, about a guy named Bill Campbell, who mentored a number of Silicon Valley executives, including Steve Jobs. And that book inspired me to write this book. And I wrote it because I have been very blessed to be part of a great company for 50 years that achieved tremendous results and has been very, very successful. And I wanted to sort of share that success, not the success, but how we achieved that success with others and hopefully people who are in management jobs or executive jobs can garner some good information from the book. And that's why I wrote it.
Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Cintas Corporation, it is based in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's where Robert is joining us from. And they provide a whole range of products and services to businesses, including uniforms, mats, mops, cleaning and restroom supplies, first aid and safety products, fire extinguishers, testing and safety courses, and the list goes on. And it is a Fortune what? Is it a Fortune 1000 company, Robert?
500.
Fortune 500. Okay, very good. Now, one of the reasons I was interested in talking to you about this subject, it's because this is a little off course for what we're usually talking about within our magazines. But right now, we have, because your book is so much about culture and corporate culture, and right now what we are facing in the real estate business is an entire office sector that's wondering whether office is going to come back because of the pandemic. A lot of people are sent home, white collar workers anyway, were sent home, those who could actually work from home. And now there's some questions as to whether that office sector is going to ever come back in the way it was pre-pandemic. Now, part of the argument among management at many companies is that you can't really build or even sustain a culture if you don't have people there in person. You can't do it simply through Zoom or Skype or what have you. What's your take on that?
Well, it certainly would be much more difficult to do because, a lot of the social interactions at breaks and lunches and in the hallways does not happen when you're working through Zoom. I don't think it's impossible, but I would say it is much more challenging for management to be able to do that. And I think it will probably result in higher turnover rates.
Now, your experience with Cintas is such that your people came to the office, correct? I mean, it was a pretty traditional sort of arrangement. You didn't have people working from home, I would imagine, or it was a rare sort of thing.
Well, pre-COVID, yes. During COVID, I know that the CEO decided to have people who could work from home to do that, but now most of the people are back.
So let's hear on culture a little bit. I believe that while you were at Cintas, you acquired probably a host of companies over the course of your career. Is that the case, and needing to absorb them into your organization? Is that right?
Hundreds of them, yes.
Okay. So, you know, I can imagine that a Fortune 500 company comes along, acquires another company, the people at that company could get pretty excited about, wow, we're going to be part of this really big company. In other cases, it might be, this is a takeover and we don't like it. Talk about the decision-making that goes into finding a suitable partner, particularly from the standpoint of making sure it's a good fit. Because anytime I talk to people about M&As, they always say culture is that's the make or break part of the deal. I mean, obviously you find a compatible company, or it's a company doing something that makes sense for you to add your product line or bolster your product line. But it's culture that ultimately will determine whether or not, and the ability to proselytize to some degree that culture so that it's adopted by the company that's being absorbed or turned into a unit.
Yes, there's no question about that. And I think, you know, in our case, we were acquiring companies that we had competed with, which I think made it doubly difficult because you were sort of acquired by the enemy. But we were very careful to recognize that when people joined our company, there was going to be some culture shock, so to speak, meaning that some companies were close to our culture, other companies were further away. And I think the more different the culture was of the company that we acquired, the more difficult it was for the people who worked in that company to become part of our company. But what we did was that we spent a lot of time up front welcoming the new people, explaining to them why it was advantageous for them to be part of us. We would also talk at length about our culture. We would tell everyone, we do not expect you to flip a switch and become sort of one of us overnight. It takes time. It takes explanation from your immediate superior about what is our culture, how does it work. We had classes where we taught people what our culture was all about and stories about how it manifested itself. And so we were tolerant of a new partners we called our employees to adjust to a new value system, in many cases a different value system, and to ultimately, you know, I would say over a 9-month to year period, we would ask them to get on the bus or get off the bus. And in most cases, they got on the bus because they liked what we did. They liked being part of it. They recognized that we were we're fair people. We listened to them. We wanted to hear their concerns. And so it's a process to have someone join a different culture, and then over time embrace the culture that they've joined. And it takes a lot of handholding early on, particularly.
So let me ask you to go straight at the title of your book, Building a Better Organization. What are the elements? What's the message in the book, or messages in the book, that point to the elements that make that allow an organization to build and build better?
Well, the first, my book's really broken down into three parts. The first part is about culture, the importance of culture, that every organization has a culture. It's incumbent upon the top management of the company to define what that culture is so they can explain it to others, so that others understand what the expectations are, so that they can use it in evaluating whether a prospective employee is compatible with their culture. I talk about ethics, and I think the culture, we would call it the ultimate competitive advantage, because when we would come up with new products or new ideas or new service techniques, our competition would be watching us. They would copy us as fast as they could, And the key is, do you have a culture of innovation in your company to constantly be coming up with new ideas and better ideas so that your competition's always chasing you rather than you chasing your competition? The second part of the book is about people, the importance of hiring people, the bright people. We developed a program we called Meticulous Hiring, where we went to great lengths to interview people in great depth, have all the people that interviewed a prospective employee get together and talk about it. We checked references very, very carefully. We were very careful in making sure that new people who joined our company would be compatible, or at least somewhat compatible, with our values. And the process of hiring, I think, is something that it's too often shortcutted. It's hard when you need someone, you're spending all this time interviewing and doing your regular job too. And there's a tendency to compromise because you want to get it over with and get somebody hired. But in fact, if you do compromise, our experience was you're almost wrong all the time. And so the second part is about hiring. It's about how do you manage people? How do you do performance evaluations? How do you give them feedback? How do you deliver a tough message to them in a way that causes them to feel like they got to do better rather than they're mad at you? And so the second part is about people. The third part of the book is about leadership, about the traits of a leader, about having high expectations, how to be tough, and how to go about being tough when you have to be tough, when not to be tough. And so it's all about the traits and the manifestation of the traits of what my experience with good leaders has been in my career.
Let's talk a little bit about part two. I can't imagine that there's anything more important than hiring good and compatible people. Did Cintas go to college campuses at all and do recruiting?
Absolutely.
Were there any, I'm asking this because Wall Street Journal just came out with their rankings. And my understanding is, unless they change their model, is that unlike other rankings of the best business colleges, they actually go to the people who hire at corporations and say, where are you getting people that are actually the best that you're seeing out there? And then would rank on that basis. Were there some particular institutions of higher learning that Cintas found especially fruitful in terms of bringing people in?
Well, there were a number of them. Because we had a national footprint, we interviewed all over the country, and we would select in each area of the country usually two or three or four colleges that we felt produced students that were able to accomplish the job we wanted them to do, but also had values and the culture that we were looking for. Some colleges that come to mind are Miami University in Oxford, very close to Cincinnati, has an excellent business school. We recruited heavily from there. A great minority college that we recruited from was Florida A&M, because in an effort to diversify. Principally about 90% African American, but they had a great business program, an MBA program there, and we recruited from that school. But we would identify in each area, maybe the West Coast might have five or six schools, the Midwest five or six schools, the Southwest, the South, and so on. And so we would, and when we would identify a school, we would get to know that school. We would assign it to an officer of the company. The officer of the company's job was to be visible at the school, to get to know the school well, make sure they were compatible with the kind of values that we wanted in a student. We would be very active on campus, give speeches there, hold job fairs. And over time, we became very well known on that campus, because you have to do that if you're going to attract the good students. And that's the way we went about it.
Talk about actually shaping corporate culture. What are the elements to that? Because obviously that there needs to be some kind of effort made from the top. Is there a lot of messaging that's involved in that? How would you characterize what you did at Cintas or maybe some other corporations that you've observed? What are the mechanisms for actually shaping a corporate culture?
Well, I think the first thing is to define it. We took the time to carefully define what our culture was. And our culture consisted of three things: a principal objective, which was to exceed our customers' expectations in order to maximize the long-term value for our working partners and shareholders. That phrase drove every major decision we made in the company. The second part of our corporate culture was what we called our corporate character, adjectives and phrases that described how we went about doing our business, what our expectations of our people were. It included things like professionalism, honesty and integrity, strong concern for satisfying the customer, respect for the people on the front line. We will always teach our people, when you have a problem, go talk to the people doing the work. They always know what's wrong, and frequently they know how to fix it. And that was the second part of our culture. The third part of our culture was our management system, where we would, when we would identify a recurring issue or problem in the company, we would define the solution to that problem in the form of what we called a policy and procedure. And it sort of became the company's handbook or manual. Each operating division had their own manual. And then there was a corporate manual. And it was the guideline that would give to people and help people in making decisions. Things like, you know, who can buy a truck? What do you do if you have an accident at your plant? What if this happens? What if that happens? And so it was an effort to define the best solution we could come up with to solve a recurring problem. Now, once we identified and documented what our culture was, we wrote books about it, several books. We would share those books with our people. We had courses that we taught. Every new management person had to attend a corporate culture meeting where a top executive of the company would explain our culture, give examples of it, tell stories about how it manifested itself. But most importantly, we lived it every day. And when somebody did something that was out of line with the culture, somebody would recognize it and somebody would act on it. And because that's the important part. It's sort of like saying you're going on a diet. That's easy to do. The hard part is eating properly every day. And so that's, I think, is true of a culture, too. There are many companies. I mean, Enron had a beautiful culture statement in their annual report just before they blew up. So a lot of companies have sayings and cultures and value statements. The most important thing is, are you living it every single day?
Now, you also emphasize being direct, directness among, you know, people within the company. Talk about that.
Well, I think it's important that people know when they're doing a good job, and they should be patted on the back and recognized, particularly in front of their peers. But it's also just as important for people to know when they're not doing a good job. And my experience as a manager has been that one of the toughest things for people to do is to give direct, honest feedback to the people who work for them, because they're afraid it may not go well. They're afraid it could turn into a confrontation. And so many people put sugar all over the feedback, don't make it direct, so that a person understands what they did wrong and what they need to change. You need to learn how to criticize the behavior, not the individual. You start out a reprimand with "you idiot." The person doesn't hear another word you say, and so you have to learn how to do that in a way that causes the subordinate to understand what they did wrong, and to recognize they shouldn't be doing it anymore in the future. And I think the only way you accomplish that is to be direct and straight with the feedback that you give the people who you work with and for.
You know, and as an example of that, people who are like yourself or experts in this area say, when it comes time for an annual review and it's not a good annual review, that should not come as a surprise to the employee, because they should have been getting messaging throughout the year. They should have been hearing from their manager throughout the year that there are some shortfalls, that there's some disconnects, that there's some behavior or lack of behavior that's not there, that it's not a once a year thing, but it's a continuing communication, continuing effort. And the person knows whether they're falling short or not, even before that annual review.
No question about that. I mean, I've even seen cases in some companies where people got fired and they were shocked that they got fired. That's the boss's fault, not the subordinates.
Yeah. So, do you have another book in you? Are you already thinking about a second book?
Honestly, no. This is the first one I've ever written, and it was quite a job, frankly. I never realized how much detail you have to get into to write a book. I may write a second one, but I'm not thinking about it yet.
How long did this one take you?
Probably about 6-7 months from start to finish.
Oh, there you go. That's a pretty fast turnaround, Robert, but you had all that experience to draw from, so real-world experience and whatnot. So for our listeners, the title of the book, again, is Building a Better Organization. You can also go to robertkohlhepp.com to learn more about Robert and the book, and his name, the spelling of his name, is right in the program notes. Robert, thank you for taking the time and joining us, and good luck with the new book.
Well, thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. And thanks for including me in your podcast.